This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herney deal. Chris Herney joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
So there's Burn On by Randy Newman from his, I think, 1972 album, Sail Away, about the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland being on fire in honor of the Cavs losing at home in Game 1 to the Pacers.
Well, there you go. We'll talk about that in a moment. The news Friday after the radio show, so we weren't able to talk about it then, was that Tuomas Iisalo will be the new permanent head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. You had indicated all along you thought this was the way it was going to go. I guess we didn't know it was going to happen on that Friday, right? Like, it's that was the only surprise,
right?
That just happened then?
Yeah, I mean, the timing seems neither here nor there. The only question was going to be, were they going to, like, quote-unquote, have a coaching search and interview other people? It felt like they'd already sort of determined that's what they were going to do. And so, you know, when Dave Yeager got elevated, you know, after Lionel Hollins was not retained, they sort of went through the charade, if you want to be ungenerous, of having a coaching search. But they sort of always knew they were hiring Dave Yeager. And so this time they just did it. Different they in terms of management in those two situations, but same owner, same organization. And so I think they always knew that's what they were doing. And my interpretation of, you know, Zach Kleiman said at the final media session, you know, I haven't made a decision on the coaching thing. I think that was, I needed to digest the season or whatever. I think, as near as I can tell, that really just meant we're going through exit interviews over the course of the day and we're talking to the players. And so we're going to do all that before we do anything. But I think that was like the final ribbon was going through the exit interviews and then having whatever your negotiation was going to be with Iisalo.
In terms of the always knew what they were going to do, like, do you believe, how far back does this go? Like, when they gave him the interim job, when they hired him last summer? Like, how do you parse that out? There's lots of conspiracy theories that when they hired him last summer, they always knew he was going to be the head coach someday.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that counts as a conspiracy.
Okay.
I mean, but yeah, I think when they made the change from Jenkins to Iisalo as the interim, I think at that point the operating assumption, I'm guessing, was that in the absence of something that would change their minds, that it was going to head towards Iisalo being the head coach. And I characterize that and what I wrote over the weekend is less an audition than a test run. You've already decided you're going to buy the car unless you see something you don't like. And so you take it out on a test run just to make sure you don't change your mind. And so, you know, you sort of know what you're doing, but your mind could change based on your experience of the thing itself. And so you take it on the test run and make sure that what you're seeing is what you expect to see out of it. And if it is, that's what you're going to do. And so I think that was sort of it. Now, when they made the hire last summer, I don't think that was with the intention of a coaching change. But I do think that was with the knowledge that, you know, this season, that if I think we all knew going into the season that this was sort of the microscope was going to really be on Jenkins here in year six of his coaching run. And so I think, you know, as of last summer, I think they knew that it wasn't a certainty they were going to be keeping Jenkins, you know, for more than the next season. But I don't think that decision had been made. Otherwise, they would have made it. And I think if this team were like, you know, Cleveland. Oklahoma City right now, or Cleveland or whatever, like there would not have been a coaching change. So I don't think it was like, you know, it was stated or it was determined that this was always going to happen going back last summer.
Right. I mean, there's something to be said for getting smart people in an organization, period. And there's no question their preference would have been for this to be, for it to be wildly successful and for it to be like Cleveland. Keith Parrish asked on Twitter, he said, as a thought experiment, though, it would be interesting to see what could have happened during his interim coaching stint where he wouldn't have gotten the head coaching job. And I think the answer to that's pretty simple, isn't it? Really, like, one thing that could have happened is the players didn't like him, right? Like, in the end,
that's the number one thing.
Yeah.
If there had been some kind of, you know, tissue rejection from the players for you know, believing in him or following his lead, then that's the number one thing that would have changed it. You know, if he'd gone, you know, instead of 5-6 or whatever it was before the playoff series, if he'd gone 0-11, which I guess, you know, maybe that would not have been possible. 0-10, I guess, is the worst it could have been. Like, maybe that changes everything. And if they're getting, like, blown out of the building every game and things get worse. Things didn't get worse. Things got, I think, slightly better, but only slightly better. But I think the real – and Kleiman said this on the day, you know, in his brief comments after the change. He said, what I'm looking for is clarity of direction. And I think implicit in that was they knew they knew they were dealing these slow, a bad hand to play, in that the team was having all kinds of – the team was sort of coming apart a little bit. The schedule was about to get tougher in the middle of this tight playoff race. You'd already lost Brandon Clark at the point you made the change. And so they weren't expecting some 180-degree dramatic turnaround in the way the team was playing. They were looking for that clarity of direction. They were looking for a guy who would follow up on their belief that he'd be comfortable in that role, that he would command the players' attention, that he would be what sort of they thought he was going to be, and they thought he was that.
I'd urge people to read the piece that you wrote about him, but let's focus on those games that he did coach. What promising things did you see from those games that he did coach, or even just the way he carried himself and communicated about basketball?
Well, I think the team had been on a downward trend. I mean, there's a lot there on the second part, but in terms of the on-court stuff, the team had been on a downward trend, in that not only were they struggling to beat the good teams, they were increasingly struggling to compete with the good teams. They were losing by more to the good teams, and then they were starting to lose to the bad teams they'd been beating most of the season, right? And so you lose double digits to Sacramento, or bad to mediocre teams, some 500 teams. You lose double digits to Sacramento on the eve of that coaching change. You lose double digits to Portland. You're sort of handled, you know. You lose double digits, obviously, to the Clippers, to the Thunder. You lose at home to the Spurs. You lose at home to the Hawks. And so there was slippage, even from the earlier, like, you know, we can't beat the good teams, but we handled the bad teams. There have been slippage from that. And I think if you look at the way the team performed relative to the schedule under Isolo, that did shore up and get better. They still only beat one winning team, and that was at Detroit. But, like, they were in the mix up until the end in most of these games, right? They just couldn't close the deal. Like, they're within 5 points or less with 2 minutes to go against the Lakers, against the Warriors twice, against another team I'm forgetting who was in that mix, Denver, against the Thunder in both the home games, et cetera. And so the team got more consistently competitive. They just couldn't get over the hump. I think Isolo showed some good stuff in terms of managing fouls, which I've talked about, and maximizing playing time that way. I think he showed some good stuff in general game planning. I think good stuff with Edie, good stuff with Pippen. And in terms of the way he communicates about basketball, I mean, I think that's sort of a big part of it. And you want to see evidence of, like, that mattering to players and not mattering to, say, a media person or a front office person.
Yeah.
But I think there's a real, I mean, to steal a phrase, to steal phrase from Hamilton that Hamilton stole from the West Wing, you're looking for the evidence of a sign of a mind at work, right? And that you really saw that with him. I mean, I didn't write anything about this kind of stuff in my column because I sort of separate like what's interesting or for me and what like matters for coaching. And I don't know how much it matters to players or fans, whether I like listening to a guy talk, but I really do. I am attracted to the way he thinks and not just like his specific opinions about basketball, but the way he processes ideas and the way he thinks about things. So there you can get that in his communication. And like Drew had a quote in his story, which is very good. A lot of overlap between my story and Drew, but not total. People should read them both. I recommend Drew's story is great. And there's a quote Drew used that I think it was in response to the 5-second call he'd gotten in the play-in, the team had gotten in the play-in against Golden State. He basically said, and I'm paraphrasing and filling in some gaps. He basically said, we haven't had a lot of practice time. We only have these shoot-arounds. There's only so much time we've been able to have. And we've been focused on the things that matter the most, not the things that are going to get the most attention. And he's basically saying, that the things that are going to impact the game, that we haven't had a lot of time to focus on late game execution specific stuff because we've only had so much time. We're focusing on the things that matter the most, even if you don't notice them. And just that idea of thinking about, like, asking simple questions. Like, is something true? Is something not true? What does this thing actually matter more than that thing? And getting away from, like, narrative and cliche and all that kind of stuff. I'm just really attracted to the way he thinks.
And he the same way when he talks about Zach Edey. Same thing. He talks about, what matters, what doesn't matter, the loud mistakes that he makes, et cetera. He talks sort of right. In much the same way. I was just to go back to the Jaren stuff really quickly and the foul trouble. Obviously, we've talked before about how you like the way that he has approached handling foul trouble. But I did think the one stat in your column was really interesting that he had four games that he coached in which Jaren ended up with 5 fouls. And in those four games that he coached where Jaren ended up with 5 fouls, Jaren played an average of 37 minutes. And then I guess you went back and looked at the last four games that Taylor Jenkins coached where Jaren ended up with 5 fouls. And in those four games, Jaren played an average of 24 minutes.
And that's somewhat anecdotal. And I'm not cherry picking. I'm going for the most recent four games. I don't want to take the time to look at every single game and over 6 years of Taylor Jenkins coach for which Jaren had 5 fouls. But I watch all the games. And so I know that pattern is real because I would complain about it in real time all the time where Jaren would get in quote unquote foul trouble and and suddenly, Jenkins is, not playing him for, 12 straight minutes and, doing everything he can to save him for the end. And then, he plays 28 minutes and the team loses by 10, and who cares? And I think Isolo sort of saw the logical flaw in all that, in the articulate. Didn't even see it. He articulated it. And then he acted accordingly. And now, when you get into early next season, is that necessarily going to be happening? No, because I don't think he's going to be playing Jaren 37 minutes even with 0 fouls early next season. But in terms of in the moment and understanding the value proposition there of quote unquote the end of the game versus just getting minutes from the guys you want to get minutes from, I think he sort of understood that and acted accordingly. And to me, that's indicative of a lot of stuff with him in terms of just the way he processes stuff.
You mentioned in the piece that the Grizzlies have hired first time given coaches a chance to have their first NBA head coaching job before, and the situations where it's worked has been with Jaeger and with Jenkins, where they had been at least a head coach at a different level. And so they knew what head coaching was about, even if it wasn't at the NBA. The cases where it didn't work, Fizdale and Ivoroni, and honestly, J.B. Bickerstaff had been an interim, but he'd never been a head coach before. That was, they had been just basically career assistants. Now, whatever, all of this is anecdotal. It is also interesting, though, Chris, that if
Bickerstaff had a pretty long run as interim head coach, so he had had that head coaching experience to some degree.
So it is interesting though. It's been 100% successful for the Grizzlies hiring an actual head coach, Fratello, Hubie, and Lionel. They're 100%.
Right.
Do you find there's anything to be would it have been? I don't know what's safe and what isn't safe. to hire an experienced actual head coach here? Is that a reason?
I think it would be perfectly reasonable for the Grizzlies to go out and hire a guy like that, right? And I think that's what a lot of fans want. There's no such thing as safe, though.
No.
I mean, it's easy to say that, but then, like, you know,
look at Phoenix.
I mean, was it safe when Detroit hired Monty Williams? Like, they went out and hired it was a total disaster.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they went and hired like this, and proven, you know, NBA coach of the year, and been a head coach multiple stops, and winner proven, and it was a total disaster. You know, Mike Budenholzer, like, didn't work out. There's no...
Yep.
It's easy to have opinions about this stuff, but really none of us know.
Yeah.
And it could work, it could, you know, some things, it could work out or not work out no matter who you hire, but I do think you're right that you know, you know someone has the ability to be a head coach when they've been a head coach. Whether it would work out for you or not, it's a separate question, but you do know that. But I do think I wrote a similar thing back when they hired Jenkins 6 years ago. I do think there's a track record to show, and again, it's not total. There are plenty of examples of guys who are just career assistants and then become good head coaches. But I do think that head coaching experience at other pro levels is more applicable to being a head coach in the NBA than being an assistant in the NBA. I think there's a pattern there to go from that. There's a bigger difference between being an assistant coach in the NBA and a head coach in the NBA than there is between being a head coach in the NBA and a head coach in some other professional setting.
A couple other things. One is you pointed out that this suggests that they're leaning into Ja. You can listen to all the national podcasts who have him traded somewhere else all you want. It feels like this is a lot of this is about unlocking Ja.
I think the only way Ja, yes, I think this is a signal that they're committed to Ja Morant as the fulcrum of the team next season. I think the only way that Ja Morant is not with the Grizzlies, there's only two ways Ja Morant's not with the Grizzlies next season. One is that he asked to not be here, and I don't think that's going to happen. And two is that someone makes an offer that's like so above and beyond that the Grizzlies say, huh, okay. And I really don't think that's going to happen, given his recent history with injuries and off-court stuff and everything else. And so I just think, you know, and I could be wrong about this, and those are the two ways I could be wrong, but I don't think either of those things are going to happen, and I think the Grizzlies' focus is going to be maximizing Ja Morant next season.
The Jaren stuff is interesting, and you pointed out that players like Jaren don't really exist that he's coaches before. Like, you ball-dominant point guards and bigs.
If they do, they're 18, 19 years old, and they're about to be headed to the NBA.
Right. So how much is that?
Like Wimby.
Right. How much of a challenge is that going to be? Figuring out which has been a challenge for every head coach, honestly. The right balance between Ja, Jaren, how you get the best of each of them simultaneously. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a welcome challenge, right?
Right.
It's a challenge that I think he should embrace, and I think he will embrace, again, assuming that Jaren's back. And I think Jaren's back in the absence of other things that could happen but aren't likely. I think Ja Morant is the most talented guy on the team, especially on the offensive end, in terms of being the engine of an offense. But I do wonder about over-reliance on Ja Morant's off-the-dribble scoring. And, you know, to me, Jaren has proven, maybe not in the last 3 minutes of a tight game, but over the course of a season, to be as reliable a one-on-one scorer, maybe, with the leaps he's taken. And then also, I feel like the Grizzlies are at the best when you're maximizing Ja's passing. To me, the best version of the Grizzlies when the Grizzlies peak over the years has not been when Ja is just making a lot of tough shots in the lane against the tight defense that you ooh and ah over. It's when he's creating easy shots for other people. And, like, just lob dunks are just flying all over the place, right?
Yep.
To me, that's the best version of Morant for the team. And so I'll be interested to see how Isolo sort of brings all these things together. You know, it'll be a challenge, but it's a good challenge.
And then finally, he had... The part of the Grizzlies' philosophy that did seem to be reflective of Isolo's philosophy early in the season was playing a lot of players and playing your best players lighter minutes in the interest of extracting greater effort or energy or whatever from your players. Play them limited times to get the very best out of them. He talked about it subsequently. We didn't necessarily see that down the stretch because of the urgency of the games and also the state of the roster. It will be interesting to see how that plays out, given a full training camp and everything else, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is an exchange I had with him very early on, either his first or I think it was his second. It wasn't his pregame availability right after he became the head coach. It was the first postgame availability after his first game. I had this exchange with him, which I've written about and other people have written about, where he basically, like, defended the idea, but then said, but what I do know is that, you know, if you're not playing with the right intensity, it doesn't work, and you have to go the other way. And then he went the other way down the stretch. But the idea of we want to play super fast, super intense, and we're going to do the quick substitutions in the lower minutes so that everyone can go all out all the time when they're on the floor, and we're playing with greater intensity than the other team. That is his philosophy. I think that philosophy was probably easier to maximize in Europe, where the talent disparities maybe were lower. I think what the Grizzlies found this season was that it worked against the bad teams. It didn't work as well as against the good teams. I suspect that may continue to be the case. But I think Eastlow will probably start out next season trying to do that, but I think what he's shown is a willingness to say, well, never mind, this is not working, let's change. And so that'll be interesting to watch next season.
Yeah, I happened to talk to Pete Pranica over the weekend, and I just asked him his sense, and he emphasized his pragmatism. He thinks of him as a highly pragmatic guy, and so you certainly saw that here. You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. It's Mother's Day, Jeffrey. Bearing down upon us. Were you aware?
My wife did.
She reminded you?
She
reminded
did
you because she wanted you to make sure you were you were kind to your mother, or because she is herself a mother?
She's handled my mother and her mother.
Oh, that's
she's taken care of that.
And she wants to make sure that
I take care of my daughter's mother.
Well, I got something for you, because Robert Irwin Jewelers is there for all of you who are celebrating moms, any kind of moms. You got your stay-at-home moms, your stepmoms, your grandmoms, your pet moms, your working moms, like moms, mother-in-laws, like there's moms, 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 all kinds of moms. Doesn't mind the kind of mom that you are celebrating. They'll all be happy if they have a diamond from Robert Irwin Jewelers. Bigger, brighter diamonds during Mother's Day diamond sale going on now. So, for example, 2-carat lab-grown diamond stud earrings. This is kind of crazy. $7.99 while supplies last. To the moon gift set that includes a to the moon and back diamond pennant and 24-carat gold-dipped rose. Only $199. Flexi diamond bangle bracelets. That's a new collection of diamond bangle bracelets. Flexible contour to her wrist from $8.99 to $59.99. They even have a diamond paw necklace for your pet mom, $119. This is the place. Do not tarry. Do not waste time. Make certain that you celebrate your mom the way she deserves to be celebrated. Free financing, by the way, 12 months, 0% interest, or take up to 60 months to pay. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations, rijewelers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. So I was in Oak Hall Saturday, reminded what a spectacular store it is. Just a little thing. So, for example, I need some new shorts, Jeffrey, and they were I got some Peter Millar shorts, and they're like, they said, get the lighter colors. They said, if you look at the guys on the PGA Tour.
I was going to say, did you go for the Peter Millar performance?
Well, they said, no, I don't know. They performance, they're incredibly comfortable and they look good. But what he said is that the color of the shirt pops
yeah.
if you go with the lighter color shorts.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one thing they steered me to. They steered me towards, JoJo steered me towards a print. I usually go striped. You know, she said, oh, try a print. And so I just, you know, wouldn't have done that. Then the Brax slacks that I got, the pants that I got from Brax.
Oh, God, they're so comfortable. Those 5 pockets.
Well, they just look great. They look great.
They
and I'll be
great
honest,
too.
I got married in a pair, but then I got ink on them.
Yeah.
So I ruined them.
Hates it.
But I still wear them because they're so comfortable. And then I'm walking around. So I got 2 pair of those. And then Paul suggested I get this. It's sort of a swim shirt kind of thing. It's got it's long sleeve, but it's like made out of the performance. It's Johnny O. I said, when am I going to wear this, Paul? And he, well, you wear it after late afternoon, gets a little cool. I ended up wearing it all weekend. I went out last night to Frank's house. I was ended up wearing it all weekend. Beautiful. Like, it's not just the clothes. The clothes are beautiful. It's what they know about you and what they know about your clothes and what it just elevates the whole thing. I'm serious. It is a magnificent store. So this would be a great week to get in to see your friends at Oak Hall. Jeffrey, it's also a busy week for a lot of reasons. So let's see, among other things, jury selection in the Sean Puffy Combs trial starts today.
I know you're locked
in. If you're going to be locked in on that. Well, okay, I'm going to give you some options. Also today, student loan collections crank up today.
All right.
You recall that during the pandemic, they paused your payment of the loans, okay, right? Like that
yeah.
paused during
yeah,
the pandemic. Yep. If you've got student loans, that was paused. And then you had the Biden administration tried to forgive the loans, and the Supreme Court said they don't have the authority to do that, so that sort of went away in a macro way. And now you're supposed to pay your loans again. But today is the day that they have begun enforcing this. So, for example, they have started a program that withholds payments of tax refunds, wages, and governmental benefits if you are behind in your loans. And basically, most Americans who have student loans are. Of the nearly 43 million people who owe money on loans, only a little more than a third have made regular payments. And so there you go. And so if you have student loans, you might want to check and see the status of your loan, because starting today, they are starting to enforce this again. And then the other thing that's happening this week, Jeffrey, May 7th, today's the 5th. After May 7th, if you're going to fly,
yep, real ID.
Do you have a real ID?
So I don't have a real ID, but
I do. You have a passport.
I have a passport.
If you have a passport, you're okay. I don't have a real ID. I do have a passport. We're flying to Colorado for a wedding in June, and Claire does not have a real ID or a passport. And if you're trying to get a real ID,
well, it's also so
good luck.
Aaliyah just last week, because we moved, she had to change her registration. You have to go in. So like she couldn't just, we both had to go in, to get your car registered with your proper address. And a lot of people there thought that's where
you get
your real ID. We both went to, what's the one on Shelby Farms? Is it Mullen Station?
Yeah, right. People were going there for the real ID. And
right,
was not,
but see, that's not where you get it. I think you have to schedule it through the DMV, and I believe there's an interview process.
Well, you have now I have no idea, but you're like, what a lot of people are doing is they're saying, the hell with this, I'm going to go to Savannah, or I'm going to go to, you know, wherever. And even those, like Claire yesterday looked to try to get
an appointment
around the state, and they were all booked up. Now, the story in the Daily Memphian by Sophia Surratt is today about this. The quotes, and I wasn't quite clear on this, but the quotes from the people at the airport said, you know, if you show up and you don't have a real ID, it could take you longer. In other words, it didn't seem to indicate
you couldn't fly,
that you couldn't, that might be extra questions.
Right.
Or, like, there was one day I end up and I had lost my license, right? I'd flown to New York, lost my license, didn't have my passport. And so I show up with my ticket. And they ask me a bunch of questions to confirm that I am who I say I am. So I didn't have any ID. And that was whatever. And I did in the end fly. I don't know if there is a way to fly if you don't have a real ID. But it's a pain in the ass to get one. If anyone has any ideas about the best way to get
the thing
one.
If you have TSA pre-check, do you still have to have the ID? Like,
I don't know.
Or clear global entry.
Let's just real quick, just see if anyone calls here. 445-0929, 445-0929. If anyone has any ideas about the best way to get one, like this week, or did you have a horror story?
Or is it too late?
Or did you, where did you go? Give me your secret fishing spot is what I'm at. I'm asking for your secret fishing hole. And maybe I'm not getting calls on this.
Jeff's trying to get his wife a real ID.
Hey, it's my radio show. It's my radio show. I'll use it however I want. I'll use it as a force for good. 445, and this will help all the people. 445-0929, 445-0929. And also, Can you fly without a real ID? Can you, if you show up and say, hey, I'm a schlep, I just got my regular old license, are they going to let you aboard your Delta flight if you don't actually have your real ID? Maybe people know these things. 445-0929. It's my radio show. I'll use it however I want. Damn it. And now, of course, the phones, with all the helpful people out there, the phones are lighting up. Jeffrey is off fielding calls. Let's see who you got, Jeffrey.
All right, Jeff, let's start with Larry in Memphis. Larry, you're on.
Hey, Larry, what's your experience? What can you help me with here?
Well, I can help you with this. Congressman Steve Cohen's office can expedite a passport application for you, and you can get it within a week if you go through his office.
He does it for anybody, or is it just because it's your Larry are a special? You've got a special connection.
He does it for anybody, and my only special connection was I listened to Jeff Coffin.
Oh, that elevates you. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. All right, well, maybe you try to get a passport. Maybe that's the better way. Get Steve, Uncle Steve, helping us out here. 445-0929. Anyone else, any wisdom on the real ID?
Jeff, we got a Jordan Bartlett. Jordan just had experience with this.
Hey, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What'd you do?
So my wife and I, we just saddled up, drove straight to Dyersburg. We were in and out in about 15 minutes.
When?
Last week.
Did you have
Thursday.
Did you have an appointment or did you just go?
We did not. Just make sure you have the correct documents.
Wow. That's good. That's good news. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a helpful tip. In and out in 15 minutes in Dyersburg. Don't the rest of you people go, though, because I'm going. I don't want the rest of you cluttering up Dyersburg.
Well, you shouldn't have taken calls off.
I wouldn't have known about Dyersburg otherwise if it weren't for Jordan. Who do we got?
Jeff, let's go to Terrell in Memphis. Terrell, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How y'all doing today?
Good. Do you have a real ID?
No, I'm waiting on this. And that was what I was about to comment about the last caller. He's telling you 15 minutes, but you still have to wait until the mail to you.
They mail.
It's about 3 or 4 week process for it to get to you. That's first off. Second of all, if you don't have a real ID, you can still fly with a passport.
With a passport, yes. But what if you don't?
Problem.
What if you don't have a passport? Can you still fly? Can you talk your way onto the plane with no real ID and no passport?
Not for what I'm hearing.
All right, thank you.
I'm
appreciate
people
it.
That have a horror stories. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Who do we got here?
Jeff, Will's got some information for us. Will, you're on.
That's what we need, actual information.
Bud.
Will, how are you?
Hey, bud, you go to Tennessee, go to the Tennessee DMV online, you go to e-services, you can request an e-ticket. The two locations that e-ticket is good for is going to be Summer Avenue as well as Bartlett. One of them is at Summer at 240, and the other one is the old Summer location down there by Elmore. But you can get an e-ticket, and that e-ticket will actually show you your place in line so that you can gauge. Like right now, I am ticket 205 at Summer at 240. They are serving ticket number 155. So you can go back in and click on, you'll get an email and with a link. You can click on it and go, and it'll show you your wait list so that you can slip straight in.
I got you. So it's like going to a deli counter, kind of.
Yeah,
pull the ticket. Thank you, Will.
A little bit.
Appreciate it. That's what we need, actual information. So there you go. All right. Well, hopefully that was helpful to people other than me as well. All right, Jeffrey, other matters that I wanted.
I'm sure this will go well this week.
Other matters that I wanted to get to. We have the news that the NFL draft in 2027, and this is cool.
I agree.
It's going to be on the Mall in Washington. It's going to D.C., and they're going to have it right there on the Mall. That's going to be awesome, right?
Yes. I'm a stadium nerd, and one of the things that I'm quite fired up about, like, I think it's insane that our nation's capital, like, to get to a football stadium, we have to go to Virginia or Maryland.
Right.
Where, you know what I mean? Like, the fact that we're putting it back at the RFK, like, I'm very much
is that
favor
wait
of
where it. Where is the
so the new stadium's going to be on the site of
on the
RFK.
Site where RFK used to be?
Yeah, which is pretty darn close.
And then they're having the draft. So next year's Pittsburgh.
Yep.
I'm a little worried, I'll be honest, because Buffalo's on the wait list here.
Yeah.
I don't know how Buffalo's going to possibly, like, with all due respect, I love Buffalo, but Orchard Park, there's nothing out there. Like, it's just a parking lot and whatever else. Orchard Park's a lovely, actually, town, but where the stadium is, it's just a stadium.
Right.
And So I don't know how. Like Three Rivers, I bet they're going to have it down there with between the river. You know,
oh, I think Pittsburgh will look great.
Pittsburgh's going to look magnificent.
Yeah. Pittsburgh's an underrated city.
It's a
very pretty,
and they have this point.
Yes,
it goes up where the rivers come together, and it may well be there. And I've been to a concert there before. That's magnificent. And then D.C. is going to look spectacular. I don't know how you compete with right there in front of the Washington Monument. And then it's going to be in a parking lot in Buffalo. I worry.
Yeah.
I worry about
but
Buffalo.
But if we put it in a parking lot in Buffalo, let's
these
be real.
These people will be dumping through tables.
The selling point is not scenery. The selling point is
going to be the
Buffalonians.
It's going to have to be the Buffalonians. They're going to have to carry the day. Also, this week, we've got the Conclave, Jeffrey.
Mm.
That starts Wednesday.
You want me to give you the current odds?
And right now, well, I was going to say, people are expecting as much betting on this as on the Super Bowl.
That feels high.
You think that feels high? Right now, the Italian Cardinal, Pietro Parolin, has emerged as the odds-on favorite to succeed Francis. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a guy named Pizza Bali that
he's the number two favorite.
Yeah.
Right.
I think though his name is just making people bet
just
on it.
Just because it's pizza.
Yeah.
So you think it's high? What are you hearing about whether can I go to FanDuel and
let's see.
Can I go to FanDuel and bet on who the next Pope's gonna be? There is obviously people got who the next president was gonna be. Right.
Right.
That was the betting favorite turned out to, and even when
but
the
that
poll,
was also a contest of two people.
Even when,
and
well, it's also, there's a lot of public information
correct.
There. Here, the feeling is this is going to be much, much, much harder to predict because no one knows what the heck goes on in the conclave, right? And it's a very different deal than predicting what the public are going to vote for. But I'll say this, even at a time when the polls were not showing necessarily that Trump would win, the betting markets had Trump winning all along, and they proved to be right.
Yeah.
What are you seeing?
So I have seen odds. Let's see. I saw one sports book that had, I would imagine almost every, because the other problem is I don't have a FanDuel account, so it's tough to just log in, and because it's going to be state by state.
Oh, I see. Okay. Anyway, you can bet on the Pope. If you really want to bet
on the
Pope,
if you want to,
you'll
you
find
can.
A way to bet on the Pope.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite? Did you bet on the Derby?
I did bet on the Derby. I want to give a quick shout out to Baeza. I made one bet, and it was Baeza win, place, or show because journalism was the pretty heavy favorite.
Right. You can't bet on journalism.
And Baeza was the horse that had run the most competitively, but he was originally outside of the points, so he had to get in with the scratches from last week. He had a terrible start.
Yeah.
He was coming from the outside, but that horse ran his absolute ass off to get to third,
and cash
we got a plus 300 winner.
We also had the news, constant updates on the Memphis basketball roster. Latest is that it feels like P.J. Haggerty's heading to NC State. Doesn't feel like that to you, although he did get an invitation to the draft combine. And only 75 players do get invitations to the draft combine. I will be stunned. Listen, I didn't think that David Jones was a draft prospect, even though he put big numbers at Memphis. And I don't think PJ Haggerty is a particular draft NBA prospect as well. Might someday be able to turn himself into one, but he is, let's be honest, he's a foul merchant, right?
Yep.
And he is an undersized scoring guard who's not a point guard, and
well, 70 guys get invited,
actually,
60 guys get drafted, and this isn't including the internationals. Yeah. This is not the draft and stashes. This is not the
so
does LeBron have another kid?
It seems unlikely. No disrespect, he's a great college player. It's just he's not a great outside shooter, he's not big enough. He's
be real. Part of the whole wanting to play point guard is
to prove that he can play point guard,
right?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like, in any event, it doesn't feel like he's coming back to Memphis. Although, as John and Parth both reported, the door is still open, so who the hell knows? But it seems unlikely. In the meantime, the Tigers did add another player, Hassan Abdul-Hakim. You familiar with his work?
So all I know is that he played at Texas Rio Grande. Rio Grande Valley, and I saw that he signed over the weekend.
He is a 6'8 guard. He is a 6'8 guard who played 3 years in junior college, which is uncommon, right? And then he played at Rio Grande Valley. I think he played 9 games at Rio Grande Valley, and then he just said, yeah, enough of this. And
played 12 games is what I'm showing, yeah.
Yeah, 12 games up through January. And then he left because of a quote-unquote unfortunate kind of situation. And so unclear what happened there, but sort of the definition of he's got 1 year left. Like, it's what college basketball has
become. Kind of like a free roll. Like,
So among the players who they've collected now, who Penny has collected now, Aaron Bradshaw is the big.
Yep.
Right? And people seem to be more hopeful about Dane Danger. At least John was much more hopeful about Dane Danger when he was on with me last week. And so he was very vague about it. But Aaron Bradshaw is the big that he has recruited. Beyond that, Sincere Parker, Doug McDaniel, Julius Thedford, Quante Berry, Danielle Vera Tuck, Philippe Patino, Dante Harris. We got a million guards. Just got a million guards,
yep.
Right? And now Hassan Abdul-Hakim. I'll tell you what. You give me those million guards and put Dane Danger in the middle of them.
Well, now it starts to feel a little different.
I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yes.
You give me those million guards and don't put Dane Danger in the middle of it, and I'm feeling pretty skeptical about it.
That is great.
Isn't that what it comes down to? Like, I don't know. Like,
but I think part of the problem is this is the unknown. I mean, people were not exactly like rioting in the streets for how great the roster was when they filled it out last year.
No, but I think, though, that was less about the roster, because let's be honest, there were some players with real pedigree last year, right? It was more about, we just put together a roster with real pedigree and saw it blow up.
People were just bummed.
They were just skeptical about that this works anyway, that you're going to get these, whatever, doesn't matter how good the players are who you're collecting, it's not going to work, we just saw it blow up, it's toxic, can't do this, whatever else. It wasn't that people didn't at least acknowledge that the players that they brought in didn't have real credentials. Here, I think the players who you're bringing in, there's the can you assemble it all on the fly again? Plus, these are less credentialed players.
No, I think that's a fair point to make. A lot of the lack of enthusiasm was more a reflection of everybody's
mood.
Just
what we just witnessed, yeah. So whatever. Again, Dane Danger would make such a massive difference here. And so we will see how all of that plays out. We got games tonight, New York and Boston. We didn't even have time to talk to Chris about the NBA series. We'll get to that more tomorrow. You got New York, Boston, and Denver, Oklahoma City. How are you feeling about the playoffs and the matchups we have? So you got Golden State, Minnesota, Indiana, Cleveland, Denver, Oklahoma City, New York, Boston.
Yeah, so last night was the first time, because I have just felt for like the last 3 months, we're on some form of a collision course of Oklahoma City's going to win the West and either Cleveland or Boston are going to win the East. Last night was the first time where you're like, okay, well, maybe Cleveland is vulnerable. Obviously, they have the Garland injury. That's a big part of it. But in the West, I still need to see someone. Like, I kind of need to see Oklahoma City look vulnerable before I really
feel like a Denver team that had to go 7 games against the Clippers is going to be a team that's going to take Oklahoma. Now they split their season series, so who knows? Who are you going to be rooting for in New York, Boston?
Probably Boston.
I'll be rooting for New York just because they're the underdog. I'll be rooting for Denver because they're the underdog. Although I guess we can get, you know, if Oklahoma City rolls,
Oklahoma City rolls, it does kind of make
it helps
realize,
the Grizzlies by implication. Indiana, Cleveland, I want Cleveland there. And Golden State, Minnesota, I want Minnesota.
Yeah.
All right. If you're looking for a new financial institution, Leaders Credit Union is the place to go. I could say that because it's where I sent Claire. It's where she sent Conroy, her son, because she loves it and I love it. They're terrific. The technology is spectacular. They got an app where you can just do everything you possibly want except to get money. Can't get money from the app. But they have relationships, Leaders does, with 85,000 ATMs across the country. So no fee, ATMs, get all the cash you need from there. So basically, if you want a new car loan, if you want a new home loan, if you want a new financial institution for any reason, just check them out. Check out Leaders. I believe in them. Leaders Credit Union, they've got a branch in Bartlett. They got a brand new branch, beautiful new branch in Arlington. But you don't have to do that. You can just download the app, and you'll see what I see. Terrific financial institution for all your banking needs. It's Leaders Financial. LeadersCU.com/ESPN. Jeffrey, what's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. You will join their program. I don't know why that hit. That's unfortunate.
Always wise. Yes. Good advice from GP.
Yes, yeah. great advice from GP. Also, Jason Munns will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will, and thanks for the help, too. We'll be back tomorrow. For now, work is done.